Well, thank you, Pastor. It is good to be here with you this evening. And this church is a special place for us. We have a lot of friends here. We have some personal supporters. We have your church partnering with us for many years. And we have my mom and her husband, Gary. So I'm on my best behavior tonight, which my wife says isn't that great. We're going to share with you about our ministry. Give me just a second. I don't know why I'm nervous tonight. Maybe because my mom's here. We have done how many churches? 23 churches. I've gotten used to this. And it doesn't bother me. I like to do this. But man, I feel nervous tonight for some reason. I need a minute to catch my breath. Well, let me tell you this. Let me tell you how we view our ministry. You guys have been partnering with us for many years, and when we're in Nicaragua, the way we do our ministry is this. We think we're working for you. We hope that you know that this is a partnership and that we feel like we're representing you in Nicaragua. And maybe that's a part of my nervousness this evening. I don't know. We want to be good representatives of you. We want to work hard. And so, as we're working in Nicaragua, that's what we're doing. And we feel accountable to you as a church. We feel accountable to all of our churches. We would work hard if we weren't accountable to any churches just because we're accountable to God. So we would do that anyways, but we want you to know we're working hard on your behalf. And we want you to know that what you're going to see tonight, these are ministries that you're doing. So we don't want you to look at us as the missionaries that are, you're sending money and we're doing something there and you're going to find out about. These are things that you're actually doing in Nicaragua. So that's kind of how we view our ministry. When missionaries come back and they start sharing reports to churches, it's, you know, we do these obligatory prayer cards, right? Everybody makes a prayer card. A lot of people get them done professionally. I don't do that. I kind of do our own little thing there. And then we print them out at Walmart, save a little bit of money. But so we're going to give you some new prayer cards tonight. My wife will probably be handing them out in the back. But she will give you these with a smile on her face, but I'm telling you, she's not smiling inside. When we came back this time, we dropped off our youngest daughter to college, and so that means that we're now empty nesters. So as we're traveling around, it's just the two of us. There's no kids. When we go back to Nicaragua, it's just going to be the two of us for the first time, empty nesters. So I thought, you know, maybe this is stereotypical. Maybe I was thinking like a guy. I don't know what I was thinking, but the kids are no longer with us, you know, we'll take them off the prayer card and just put a nice picture of my wife and I there. Well, she did not appreciate that very much. So if you're ever going to do that, don't, okay? But so hopefully pick one of those up after the service. On our prayer card, you'll find a Facebook link. I don't know if you have Facebook or not. We use Facebook for ministry. The only thing we do on Facebook is ministry stuff. We don't use it for politics. We don't use it for complaining. But if you want to know what's going on in Nicaragua, get our prayer card or sign up with become friends with us on Facebook, and you can follow our ministry. Right now, you're just going to see us eating a lot of food because that seems to be what we do in the States. But get a prayer card, hook up with us on Facebook, and follow our ministry there. We do have four kids, okay? So I put this picture in just to, we really need to make my wife happy with this. But we really do have four kids. Two of them are now living and working in this area, Troy and Elmira area. And then the other two are going to Liberty University. So we have a freshman and a junior at Liberty. Well, the Bible says, go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And so that's what we decided to do about 13, 14 years ago as a family. We just we took this as a serious, simple command from Scripture. And we hope you know that as missionaries come and get in front of you, they aren't these super spiritual people that are on some special plane of spirituality. We are very normal people. We're just regular. We're a regular family out of a good local church. We loved our church. I loved my job. I was an accountant, did accounting for many years for the government. Loved my job. But we just believed that after attending missions conferences, after getting to know missionaries, we kind of got a burden for another country, another culture, and we wanted to go preach the gospel in another country. And so that's what we're doing. We're doing in Nicaragua what you guys are doing here in Tawanda, which is just preaching the gospel, just taking that simple command to the country of Nicaragua. Nicaragua, I'll tell you, just to give you a little idea about Nicaragua, as we go around and tell people about Nicaragua, we tell them that we live there, we explain them what we're doing, they always say, how are things in Africa? Well, it's not in Africa, we say it's Central America. Things in Africa are probably actually a little more rough than they are in Nicaragua. But to give you an idea just geographically of Nicaragua, as you think about New York State, our country is almost the same size and shape as New York State. So in that area, we have about 6.5 million people. If you were to draw a line straight down through the middle of the country and look at the left-hand side, that's where you would find the majority of those people living. On that left-hand side, there's just a few cities, a few big cities, and that's where most of the population would live. We live in the capital city of Managua, which has about 3.5 million people in the capital city. Well, Nicaragua is known as the land of lakes and volcanoes for pretty obvious reasons. There's a lot of lakes and volcanoes. Beautiful landscape. We have oceans on both sides, lakes all over the country. Really cool landscape. We're right on a fault line. We're on the Ring of Fire. It's the same fault line that runs right up through California. And so Mount St. Helens would be right on that same line. And throughout the country of Nicaragua, we have probably 20, 25 volcanoes, with many of those volcanoes being active. If you were to look out our back door, you would find Volcan Momotombo, which is it's a volcano that's maybe about 3 years ago started becoming active. And so as we look out now, there's ash clouds, often smoke coming out of the volcano. And occasionally we can see lava, you know, coming out the side. It's about 12 kilometers away, just over the lake. If you were to look down on our home, you would find that we live on this volcano called Volcan Apoyeque. Now, our home would be located right in this area. There's a large residential neighborhood of about 1,000 homes. We also have a ministry center that sits on about 160 acres right there at the base of that volcano. So I did some studying on this volcano, which was a big mistake, let me tell you. I didn't know a lot about volcanoes, but I found that volcanologists, you know, there's different kinds of volcanoes, and they explode different ways, and they do different things. And this particular volcano, it only explodes one way. And this, I mean, it explodes in it with a massive, huge explosion. It's done it many times. It actually has registered the third biggest explosion in the history of recorded in the world, I guess, something like that. But they say that there's some volcanologists, if you look at some of the lists right now, this is listed as the second most dangerous volcano in the world on some of the lists. And the reason is because it's surrounded by Lake Managua. We're very close to the capital city. And they say it explodes every 2,000 years. The last time it exploded was 5 BC. And I went to school. And so I know that, the timing there is kind of makes me a little nervous, you know. But they say if it were to explode, it would send Lake Managua over the city, killing 3.5 million people. For that reason, it's very high on the list. So that's where we live. I remember as a kid that we'd watch, I think it was National Geographic on Saturday mornings. And every once in a while, they'd do a special on volcanoes. And so they'd go into, I think it was the Philippines, or I can't remember exactly where it was. But they would show volcanoes erupting and villagers fleeing and people dying. And I remember as a kid, I would watch those shows and I would think, who would be dumb enough to ever live at the base of a volcano? I mean, what do you expect? So now I know who does that. But we just always say our kids will have a cool story to tell if it ever happens, right? Well, it's really hot. It's really hot in Nicaragua. Nicaragua is a hot, hot place to work, to live. It's hot all the time. We have two seasons. Now, this slide is an obvious exaggeration, right? I mean, it is way hotter than this slide would ever begin to show you because it is hot. But we do have summer and winter, but it's rainy season and dry season. So two seasons, 6 months of rain. Everything, the rain pours down pretty much every day, every other day. You get a lot of rain. Everything turns green. Everything floods. But just beautiful, lush, a lot of weeds, a lot of green. And then the rains stop, and then it's 6 months of dry. You literally don't get a drop. Everything turns brown. Everything dies. Everything catches on fire. The animals get skinny. The dust blows, and it does that for 6 months. until the rains come again, and then the dust and the dirt just turn right back into grass and weeds. It's very, very interesting how that works. I haven't figured it out, but it definitely does it. Well, some of the things that you'd find, it's a tropical country, so the animals, the reptiles would be tropical in nature. We have many snakes. We have a lot of different kinds of spiders and scorpions and tarantulas, all of those fun kind of things we find in the house. And so we have killed and find many, many snakes. We're thankful that over the 11 years that we've been in Nicaragua, we've had thousands of people come through our ministry center, done a lot of camps, worked in a lot of fields, and we've never had anyone seriously injured by a dangerous animal or a poisonous snake. We've had, you know, scorpion stings and things like that, but nothing super serious. Hablamos español en Nicaragua, and so if you know what I said, you would know that we speak Spanish in Nicaragua, and it may be that you've visited Central America, maybe you've gone to Costa Rica on a vacation, maybe you've gone to a touristy kind of place somewhere in Central America. Belize, they would speak English in Belize. You can get away with English in a lot of Central American countries, but really if you came to Nicaragua, if you wanted to vacation or do anything or move around, you need to speak Spanish because that's what they speak in Nicaragua. So when we went to the mission field, we were there 1 year in Costa Rica at a full-time language school. After that first year, we moved up into Nicaragua where we've now been immersed in the culture, immersed in the language for 11 years, and so now we can totally, we speak fluent Spanish, and we can preach and teach and counsel and do all of that in Spanish. Well, what do missionaries eat in Nicaragua? We eat some pretty basic foods. You know, when we believe that God wanted us to move to another country and do that, I wasn't afraid to take our family there. I wasn't afraid to quit our job, but I was afraid of the food. I had heard missionaries have to eat weird stuff, and I was a meat and potatoes and corn. That was it. And my mom really, when we were growing up, we didn't have to eat all kinds of weird vegetables and stuff. And so I wasn't used to it. But I was nervous about the food, going to eat food in Nicaragua. Well, when we got there, we found out it wasn't too bad. Nicaragua is a very poor country. And so the average family, the average Nicaraguan, almost every Nicaraguan, will have this dish called gallo pinto. It's a mix of rice and beans. And they will eat it every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, every day of their entire life. And so it's the national dish, rice and beans, and that's what they eat, and they love it, and they're proud of it, and it's just what they do. It's what they eat. So they'll accompany that gallo pinto with a plátano, a plantain, or something similar to a banana. To give a little variety, each day they'll cook it up a different way, kind of like a potato. They'll boil it, bake it, fry it, do different things with it. So they'll put that on a plate. They'll have plantain, they'll have rice and beans, and if they can afford meat, they'll have chicken. They'll also have maybe salad or tortilla or something like that. So the food is very bland in Nicaragua. As we've been going around the States, I mean, it seems like all we do is eat. But it's like a flavor burst explosion in your mouth here in the States. Our food is just really bland in here. Man, everything tastes so good. But that's what we eat in Nicaragua. If I were to try to describe the country in just a few phrases, I would say these things. It's extremely poor, politically unstable, and very, very Catholic. So politically unstable, our president, his name is Daniel Ortega. His wife is the vice president right now. She was just elected to be vice president. So we have a husband and wife who are president and vice president. And maybe the name Daniel Ortega rings a bell with you. It's the Sandinista party that's running the country now. They have been for three terms. So he's been in there for quite a while, which really is illegal, but they changed the constitution, and he will be the president now as long as he wants to be. The elections are not transparent at all. There's quite a bit of corruption in different parts of the society. But Daniel Ortega was a guy who, back in the 80s, you may remember Oliver North, Ronald Reagan, the Iran-Contra affair. And what was happening was the United States was, I think they were selling some guns or something in Iran, and that money was being funneled to this group called the Contras, who was a group fighting against Daniel Ortega, the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. And so that was playing out in the 80s. There was a big war, a lot of unrest in the country. The country really suffered as a result. But in the end, there was the Sandinistas lost, but then they regained power, and they've had power now for many, many years. And so the country is socialist. The friends of Nicaragua would be Cuba, Iran, Russia does a lot of work in Nicaragua. And so that's who, what I always say is, the president hangs out with all the people that your mother would tell you don't hang out with. That's what they do. So those would be friends of the country of Nicaragua. It's a very, very poor country. 85% probably of the people live in total poverty, with maybe 15, maybe 10% of the people owning everything else, being totally rich, rich even by North American standards, so they would own all the companies and all of the land. This picture was taken in just a regular neighborhood that we work in. One of these guys is a church planter. The other one is our director of church planting, and we had just gone in here and we're working in one of the neighborhoods. But in a neighborhood, a typical neighborhood like this, you'd go in, there'd be 800 homes, 500 homes, 1,000 homes, all of them very similar to the one you see in the background. And so in that home, you'd have three to six people living. Dirt floor, may or may not have a bed, definitely don't have any kind of indoor plumbing. The water's probably turned on a couple days a week where they fill up barrels, and they might have a well out back, but if they did have a well that was hand-dug, it would be dug next to a latrine where they use the bathroom, and the well would be deeper than latrine, and so the dirty water goes into the well, and then the people get sick, and just things that are very common in, among the people that we work with. You can find the kitchen in this picture. If you look between the two men, that's a very standard, very common kitchen among the people of Nicaragua, with probably 70% of the people still cooking over an open fire. So they put a couple bricks out, a couple pieces of wood, and they cook over that open fire. If you were to walk through the neighborhood, you'd have a group of kids chasing you around. They'd want to play. You'd have people coming out that want to talk to you. Very friendly people. Very easy to minister in Nicaragua. We love doing work in Nicaragua. It's just so easy. You know, we come back to the States, and if you try to talk to a stranger, it's very difficult. They don't want to have it. They don't want to talk to you. They don't want to open their door. It's not like that in Nicaragua. They love to come out. They love to talk to you. Their houses would be bordered with barbed wire, but you'd find tons of kids, tons of people just meandering around, playing out in the streets, very happy, but very, very poor people. As we go into the neighborhoods and we preach and teach and hold vacation Bible school, we do all kinds of different things. But every time we go in, we take a big roll of plastic or two rolls of plastic, heavy plastic. We take some hammers and nails and we go around and we help people. We put a new roof on with plastic. A lot of times their bathrooms where they use the outhouse doesn't have any walls, and so there's no privacy. Their shower outside won't have any kind of privacy or anything. So we'll wrap that in plastic. We like to do that in the neighborhoods as we go in and work with the people. It's a very religious country. It's a Latin country, so it's Catholic. And so it's very common as we're just going through a normal work week that there's some kind of special parade or celebration or event being held in honor of some saint. So as we're driving through town, it's very common to be held up by groups of people walking right down the middle of the street, parading a saint, or doing whatever it is they do to celebrate a particular saint. Sometimes they're carrying Jesus on a cross. Sometimes it's Mary. Sometimes they're on their knees. Sometimes they're covered in tar. You see all kinds of crazy things. Sometimes they're dancing with their idols. If you were to go to the main cathedral downtown, you'd find that it's a very busy place all day long, people coming and going and praying through all the stations of the saints at the Catholic Church. So they're very religious. In that Catholic Church, you'd find one room off to the side, similar to what you had in the fellowship hall there. But they'd have pews, and up front, kind of on a stage sort of like this, they have a glass coffin. And inside is a dead Jesus. And so they have this glass coffin with Jesus. He's dead. He's laying there. And they come in and they sit in the pews and they pray to dead Jesus and they burn candles and they're very sincere. And then they leave that station and they'll go to the last one before they head out to work. And the last one is Jesus it's like this room. It's a circle. And in the middle, you have Jesus. He's on a cross. And so they go in there and they look at Jesus on the cross and they pray and they're very sincere. And then they head out for their day of work. And so they're praying to saints, they're praying to a dead Jesus, but it's a very depressing place, really. It's very depressing because they're always praying to dead Jesus and Jesus on the cross, and they don't understand or they don't teach the hope that the resurrection, you know, that Jesus has overcome death and we have life and a future home. And you don't find that in the Catholic Church, but they are very, very sincere people when it comes to their religion. Well, we know that the Bible says this in Acts chapter 4. Peter was causing quite a stir. I think he was in Jerusalem causing quite a stir there. And a man had been healed, and the people and the leaders were asking Peter, "Hey, what's going on? You know, how are you doing this? And whose name are you doing these things?" And so Peter always took opportunities to preach. And so he started preaching, and there's a passage there that you can read. We're not going to read the passage. But basically, he's speaking of Jesus, and then he comes down to the end, and his kind of summation is, he's talking about Jesus. He says, "Neither is there salvation in any other, for there is none other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved." See, the problem in Nicaragua is that the people believe in Jesus, and they believe in salvation by faith. But they also believe that they need to pray to the saints, and they believe they need to confess to the priest, and they believe they need to walk on their knees, and they believe that they have to pay people to get out of purgatory, and they believe all of these things, and they take all of these things, and they basically create this big pile of things that they're doing, and they think, if I can just get this pile big enough, maybe I can get to purgatory, and then maybe my family who's left behind can pray me through to heaven. You know, it's a very sad gospel message. It's a very wrong gospel message. We have the wonderful hope of a risen Savior, and we know that it's through simple faith and belief in Jesus Christ and what he did for us on the cross. That's the message of salvation, and we don't have to add anything to that. We can't add anything to that, and so that's what we're preaching in Nicaragua to the people who are very religious there. Well, we want to tell you about what it is that we do, because what we do there is what you do there. And so we think you might want to know that. And, you know, like I said earlier, what we are doing there, we hope you feel like it is what you're doing, because these are your ministries, and we hope that you're encouraged by what you're doing in Nicaragua. Just to give you an idea of some of our current responsibilities in Nicaragua, I tell you, there's a lot of work to do. If there is anyone here that is kind of looking to the future and you don't really, maybe things aren't clear or you're looking for a new direction, there's a place for you on the mission field. There is a place for mechanics, office people, pastors, students. There's a place for all kinds of ministries that we need help with, camps, just so many different things that you can do on the mission field. Don't leave them. Everyone's called to preach the gospel. Everyone is called to preach the gospel. Don't feel like you can. I'm not called to be a missionary. You are called to be a missionary because you're called to preach the gospel. Come do it in Nicaragua because we need help. You could probably have any one of your missionaries up here, and they all need help. There's more responsibilities on the mission field than anybody can do, but let me tell you about some of ours. So right now, I'm the current team leader of our group of missionaries in Nicaragua. We are planting a church in our neighborhood. We have about 1,000, 1,200 homes or so in our neighborhood, and we've started a church there. We host about 7 short-term mission teams a year. My wife started a ministry, a vocational ministry called Seeds Nicaragua. We're going to tell you about some of these things. We've had a school of church planting that we started 11 years ago that's been going the whole time. And then we have a large ministry center that there's a lot going on there too. So just let me run through these real quick. About 3 years ago, our team had grown quite large. The team of ABW missionaries in Nicaragua, which is a wonderful thing. But there's a lot of work that comes along with that. You know, we have an office that wants to know what's going on, and they want reports, and there's a lot of approvals, and there's things that happen, and people get sick. And so right now, I would be in charge of kind of the team oversight, team guidance, and team care. And so what that means is when there's reporting that needs to be done or approvals that need to be handled or special building projects, that I would have to work some of those things out. Team guidance, we do a lot of strategic planning. We have meetings, we have monthly business meetings, all that kind of thing. And then team care. You might think, this is our current team of missionaries in Nicaragua. This picture was taken 3 months ago. No, maybe about a month and a half ago, I think, when we were in Orlando, about a month ago, a month and a half ago. And so that's our current team of missionaries in Nicaragua. We have a huge group, a wonderful group, and we can get a ton done when we're all on the same page. But you see there it says team care, pastoral care, and conflict resolution. You might think you get 18, 20 missionaries together. These are Christian people. They're working for the Lord, and everything's just fine and dandy, right? No. Basically, what you get is a lot of people who didn't even know each other before, and now they're working together very closely, and you have personality clashes, and you know, it's not all easy. It's not easy to work together sometimes. And so we have conflicts, and we work through those things, but God has given us a wonderful team. We have... right now we have three single ladies, I think, on the field. Is it three or four? We have four. We just got another single lady, four single ladies on the field, nurses. They were school teachers, nurses. We have several couples. We have people that were in the business field. We have one guy that just came, him and his family. He owned a rental business in the States. We have school teachers, pastors. But God has given us just a great team, a diverse group of people with great talents who work. Everyone works very hard. And we're all working together with one purpose. And we found that if we can keep the main thing, we can kind of work through all of our problems. And the main thing is this: we're working together to fulfill the Great Commission by multiplying leaders, churches, and missions movements among every people. That's what we're trying to do. And so we have a good team that God's given us, and we're thankful for that. In August of 2015, we thought it would be a good idea. We knew that our neighborhood was being built. We were working next door in our ministry center, and we saw that a big piece of ground had been purchased and homes started being built. These homes were different than what we've been used to seeing in Nicaragua. It was almost like a middle class that was building up. And so what we would call the middle class there would be making $500 a month. And with $500 a month, if you have a couple, two or three people working, that would be enough to get you cinder block walls, a tin roof, a tile floor, a bathroom in your home, running water, a couple of bedrooms. You'd have a bed, a refrigerator. So kind of a nice little small home, maybe 300 to 600 square feet. And so they were planning on putting 1,000 homes next to our ministry center. And so we knew there would not be an evangelical church in that community. So we decided that we would like to start one. And we knew that would be a tough area for the guys that we worked with are very poor. And class divisions are very strong in Nicaragua, so the guys that we knew could never work in this community. So we started praying that God would send us a Nicaraguan to work with that could fit into that class level. And it was really amazing the way it worked out. The guy that ended up starting a church with us, a Nicaraguan, was a guy who was saved in our camp as a teenager. He was going to an ABW church plant, saved in our camp. Went off to Argentina, Word of Life Argentina, got a Bible degree, came back, and we hired him to run camps. And so as he was running camps, he decided that he wanted to live closer to where he was working, which was our neighborhood, so he rented a home in the neighborhood. And then we started talking to him and asking about his interest in pastoring a church. And one thing led to another, and we ended up working with a really great family, great pastor. We started the church with a Friday night Bible study. We started with 19 people that came to our first Bible study on a Friday night. Since then, we had our church, we had the kids in our home. The kids would come to our home, and then the church would be in our neighbor's home. But since that time, it's been a couple years now, we've been able to grow. We've been able to purchase a beautiful piece of property in the middle of the... We actually got the piece of property that in every town in Nicaragua where the Central Park is, there's a Catholic church. We were able to get the piece of land that the Catholic Church always gets. As far as I know, we're the only evangelicals that have ever gotten that piece of land. So we were able to purchase a piece of land. We meet under a tent. The church has grown. We now have 32 members that have been saved and baptized. We have two Nicaraguan deacons. And so things are going very well. Our current leadership team, we call it a leadership team that we have, is two Nicaraguans. We just brought on a worship leader named Osman. And so we have Pastor Marco, who's our preaching and lead pastor. And then we have Osman, who's leading the worship, and then me as a missionary. And I'm hoping to work myself out of that position by the end of 2018. And then we'll turn the church totally over, and it will be a national work. But God is really blessed. We would do anything that you would do here. We have Christmas dinners, you know, special events. We do marriage classes and things like that. We've had many baptisms, but God is really blessed in that we're seeing people saved, baptized. We're seeing a lot of people who had been living together for many, many years, had families, but had never been married. We're seeing people get saved and becoming married, learning about how God sees the family. One of the things that Carrie and I really do now a lot of is something we call kitchen table counseling and discipleship. And basically, we just open our home. This is a picture inside of our home. It's our kitchen, dining room, laundry room is right there. But all we do is open our door and we have people come over. If you were to come to our house, you would always find someone in there. And what we do is we have them come over. They spend all day Sunday. They spend in the evenings. They're knocking on our door at 8 o'clock at night. And they've got issues and they've got problems and they want to have fun and they want to talk. And so we play dominoes. They play a lot of dominoes in Nicaragua. So we pull out the dominoes. We get a lot of food and we eat food and we laugh and we play games and we talk. Sometimes we cry. And what we find out is that people's lives are messed up. I mean, people's lives are just so messed up. And they need counsel. They need help. They need the Lord. And so we just have opened up our table. And that's what we do with people. Isamar, who you see in the front of the picture, she's a young lady who has had a really rough life. There's no husband in the picture. There's no father in the picture. She's got a son there, Jorge, that you see in the picture. She's not saved. We've been working with her for a long time. She's close, but she keeps coming over. And we think she'll be saved soon. Gustavo and Flor, there are some neighbors of ours as well. Gustavo was recently saved. Baptized, they were married, they were living together, they were married, and now are members of our church, and he's actually doing a lot of the work for me while I'm gone, and so he's really stepped up. We have some good friends, Norman and Christian. Pretty much every marriage or every couple that you find, very few of them are married. They're just living together, and so Norman and Christian were the same. They were a couple that had been living together for 10 years, had a family. Norman was not saved. He's a banker. He's a banker during the week and an alcoholic, a drunk on the weekend. And so we got to know them. They started coming to the church. Norman was saved in our home. And then they were married, not in our home. They were married at our ministry center. We've had a lot of weddings. You do a lot of weddings because they can't be a member of your church till they're married. And so we do a lot of weddings. But they get saved. They get right with the Lord. And so we've been working with them. They're our best friends right now in Nicaragua. We're discipling them, but a really neat family. So God's brought a lot of people in through the church. Another thing we do is 11 years ago, we started the ABW School of Church Planting. When we first went to Nicaragua, we didn't know exactly what church planting would look like. And so we thought it would be wise. The first thing we should do is go to the local leadership, find some pastors, find some good churches, and ask them what they needed. We didn't want to be, you know, the great white missionaries from the north who come to save the country. We wanted to find out what was going on and how we could help because we were there to help. If they didn't need us, we would just have left. But they said, we have the goal of planting 50 churches in the next 10 years, but we have no clue how to do it. Missionaries started this church, and we have guys that have been trained, but we don't know where to go from here. So they asked if we could help with that, and we said, sure, we can help. So we basically, as a group of missionaries, got together and worked out a school. We started an institute, which was a two-year program using church planter manuals that we got from Europe, from Russia, I think they were. And so we work our way through 5 manuals of church planting with guys that are sent to us. We work in partnership with a local church. So if we were working with your church, you would send us guys that have gone to a Bible institute that are already working in your church that you're willing to send out to start a church somewhere else. So you would send them to us. We would work with them for 2 years. And so we basically have your people on loan. We help them from the very beginning find a location in Nicaragua that's never had the gospel message. There's no church established. And through the course of 2 years, classroom training, extensive classroom training and practical in-the-field experience, they begin leading a group of people in a neighborhood where there's never been a church. By the end of the two-year program, almost all of these guys have had congregations started with regular Bible studies or church services going on at the end of that 2 years, at which time they would then graduate from our program. They're released back to the church. We have nothing. There's a Nicaraguan pastoring a church, and he's being supervised by the church that he came out of. And so we have friends, we're counselors, we're helpers. We take teams and help them, but really it's a Nicaraguan church at that point. Our goal is to saturate Nicaragua with churches. You can imagine in a country where it rains 6 months of the year and people don't have cars, they're not going to walk real far. And so we have to start a lot of small churches. But what we're trying to do is saturate Nicaragua with Bible preaching churches. If you were to go around to some of our congregations, you would find that some of them are small groups meeting in homes. Others bring chairs and meet under the trees in kind of like jungly kind of areas. Others meet on porches. Some meet in churches. Some of them have buildings. We do 3 days of extensive classroom training. We house them, feed them. All of our church planners come in for 3 days. We teach for 3 straight days and nights. And then we send them out for 1 month to do a lot of homework. And so they will spend the rest of the month doing what we've given them to do. We're never seen as the leaders in these places. They come back, they report how it went. We go over it with them, we counsel them. We give them the next set of classes, and that goes on for 2 years. Then we have a nice graduation. And so they dress up. They don't wear ties often in Nicaragua, but they do get to dress up for the graduation. And that's a good time. Just let me give you some results to date of our Institute of Church Planners the last 11 years. We've had 60 graduates of our 2-year program. 38 of those are currently active. And so there is some attrition. There's reasons that people stop. Bad things happen. Sin sometimes happens. Really, the majority of reasons that we lose pastors is we're sending them out to locations where there was no church, there's no tithing, they have no other job, and they just simply can't survive financially. And so it becomes they can't eat, their family can't eat, and so they come off the field. So the attrition that we've had is mainly for that reason. But 38 active church planters with in places is really exciting. 21 of those are in brand new areas of Nicaragua that have never had the gospel message preached, where we have congregations. 17 of our graduates have been asked to go back and pastor already existing good Bible-believing churches, and so that's exciting as well. We have 2 classes currently active. We're on a rotation now where every December we have a graduation, and so this next week coming up we have guys graduating, and then next December we'll have another graduating class. We have a graduating class now every December. We've also started an advanced Bible training track for all of our graduates because we found that they're encountering things that are really difficult. They don't have some of the advanced training that is really necessary to work in some of these areas. And so we've started advanced Bible training track. The group of people that you see there, that was taken a few months ago. We brought in someone from the States, and we had extensive training in biblical counseling. So really neat things we're doing with some of our graduates. Church planter wives are a crucial part of the program as well. And as the missionary men are working with the church planter guys, their wives, the church planters, their wives are coming in and working with the missionary wives. And so that's been really exciting to see. I think the ladies are really good teachers. They do a good job, and they build really strong relationships with the church planter wives, and that way they can be a really big encouragement to their husbands. Just to give you an idea of some of the church plants we have going on around the country, those little white dots, if you can see them up there, would represent church plants going on in different areas of Nicaragua. So you can see there's a lot of different things going on in different places, with most of them on the left-hand side because that's where most of the population is. Just let me tell you one exciting story. This is Pastor Victor. One of the things we're trying to teach our church planters, we're trying to talk to them about the concept of world missions and having Nicaraguan churches sending out missionaries to other countries, like your church is sending us to Nicaragua. In Nicaragua, it's uncommon. I don't know of any church that has sent a Nicaraguan across the border to another country. And the reason that's important is because Nicaraguans can go to places that North Americans can't go. Nicaraguans can be accepted in some Muslim countries, and so we're trying to make an emphasis on missions, foreign missions. So we're starting to have missions conferences with our pastors. And we had 600 people come to a recent missions conference. And what we did was we asked all of our graduates who had gone out and started churches, we asked them to bring back a bulletin board of what they were doing in their area since they graduated from the program. Pastor Victor, 7 years ago, he's one of our best students. He graduated 7 years ago working up in the coffee growing area of Nicaragua, and he brings back this bulletin board. And so I'm looking at his bulletin board, and I asked him what that paper was over there that you see. It's got a red frame around it, white piece of paper. And he said that was 11 churches that their church had started after graduating from the church planning class. One pastor who started 11 churches. I mean, it's amazing, it's wonderful, it's scary. My wife and I often talk about this must be kind of what the New Testament church was like. You know, people just excited and getting saved, and new Christians want to go out and tell everybody, and you're trying to keep it under wraps, but it's exciting and you want to let them go. And so just neat multiplication stuff that's happening through these guys. God has given us a really good group of guys. Well, we host short-term mission trips. We have 7 already lined up for next year. You can imagine 7 teams coming down for 7 to 10 days. That takes up about 2 months of your time just on the field with teams of people. So it's a lot of work. We love it. We love having teams. We can get a lot done. We think it's great for the church. And so we would welcome you guys anytime. If you ever want to send a group, if you want to come down as a family, as a single, we've had as many as 83 in one trip. We've had as few as 1. And so we just want you to know this is your ministry. If you want to come visit us, come. We have an open door, and we would love to have you do that. Some of the things we do would be vacation Bible school. We get into public schools. We have the opportunity to get in and preach and teach and do activities in public schools or Catholic schools. Many doors are open in Nicaragua to do all kinds of ministries. So if you want to send a team, go ahead and do that. I mentioned to you that we work with very poor people. We're sending them into places where there's no one tithing, and so there are times that they fall away because they can't support their family. So we saw that need, and we started talking about a vocational training school that might be able to help create an economy in the churches, and we started doing some different projects. My wife really headed this up and started something called Nicaragua Seeds. It's kind of like the trademark when they sell things. So we did a test with some sewing projects, and I think your ladies' missionary fellowship may have been involved in some of this stuff. And I want to say thank you to that group who are very kind to us, and we know you're praying for us, thinking about us, sending us money. You do all kinds of things. You're very kind, and I think you helped get this ministry kicked off. But right now there's 30 ladies in Nicaragua that have earned their own sewing machines because they learned how to make something. They learned how to budget a little bit, and they started making things. They were able to buy their own sewing machines, and now they have little businesses kind of going in their neighborhoods because we did a little project, a little sewing project with some of these ladies. We've also done some test markets in meat chickens, bees. We're doing pigs. Basically, what we do is we try to think of things that a Nicaraguan could do pretty cheaply, and like raise pigs. So I just go out and buy 4 pigs. I don't know how to raise pigs. I know nothing about pigs, but I just go buy them and I feed them, and then I try to sell them after 3 or 4 months. If I can make $50 off those pigs, then I say, if I can do that, a Nicaraguan pastor can do that. So then I teach a Nicaraguan pastor how to do that. So it's not difficult things. They don't need to make a lot of money, but we're trying through the vocational program to create an economy in the churches so that the pastors can be supported. We've seen people cry because they've had money for the first time ever. They had to ask our ladies, how do I figure out 10%? Because they've never had money. They don't know what 10% is, and they want to give to the church. And so that's really exciting when you're trying to help a church support itself, and you've got ladies that are making things and they can tie. That's really exciting when you get testimonies like that. The last thing we do is we have a large ministry center. We have 160 acres, a fully developed ministry center that hosts our School of Church Planning. We do leadership training. We have full-time camps running year-round. Our ministry center has 35 full-time employees, so it's a big operation. We do about 20,000 meals a year. We feed all the groups that come in. We're doing 3 days of camps a year. We bring in public schools, Catholic schools. Our church planters bring in their town kids. And we run a full camp program. So in 2000, this is a little old, 2016, we had over 15,000 people come through. I'm sure this year, I guess that's not that old. What are we in, 2017, right? I am so confused right now. This year we've had at least 16,000 people. 9,000 of those are kids and youth who come to camp and make all kinds of decisions. And so just really exciting to see what the Lord's been doing. He's provided a beautiful, wonderful place outside of the city, outside of the noise and the poverty, where groups can come and they can be preached to and they hear the gospel and they have fun and they use the pool. And so we're just really excited about what God's done through the camp. But we have soccer fields, just really nice environment overlooking the volcanoes, neat places where kids can get away, do their devotions, have prayer times. We can sleep about 130 people in beds, so we have nice cabins. It's hot, but they don't have air conditioning, but it's nice. They're nice buildings with showers and bathrooms and beds. We have a dining hall, a seminary building with an air-conditioned room where we do our teaching for our church planners. If you did not have one air-conditioned room for teaching, it would just be unbearable. But we do have one in our seminary building. Did this thing? Oh, there we go. We have a beautiful pool. God's just provided a beautiful, beautiful pool. And also a gym. We have a gym that can hold about 600 or 700 people. We had Answers in Genesis come down last year and hosted the first ever Answers in Genesis conference in Nicaragua. So that was really exciting and cool. We have a large farm where we do a lot of our testing. So if anyone knows anything about agriculture, I'm sure we have some around here. And you think you could think of a project to help us with, we'll let you come out and have some land and try something and teach us something. But we're growing plantains and yucca. We're selling chicken to our kitchen that we use to feed the kids. And so we're farming about 100 acres or so of land. Let me tell you what we're getting ready to do. My time's almost up. When we're on a five-month tour here in the States, we're getting in. We've had three conferences that we've been involved in that were a week long, and we're getting into about 33 churches. We've gone 10,000 miles in the last 2.5 months from Wisconsin down to Florida and everything in between. My mom is letting us use her car. Have no idea why she's letting us do that. 10,000 miles, one accident, but that was not my fault. And the check is in the glove compartment from the insurance company. Let's see, we're going to keep doing the same thing we've been doing the whole time. So you can imagine all that stuff going. If God didn't give us a good team, we'd never be able to do those things. These are not things we do on our own. We do those with a team of missionaries. We do them with your support, your prayers. So there's a lot of people involved in these ministries. But we're just going to go back and jump back in on January 2nd. Two exciting things that we're doing is we're building a church for our local church plant. We have three teams lined up for February that are coming down to build a 16-by-30 structure, so we won't have to meet in the tent any longer. And then we're also looking at building a vocational training school where we can bring in pastors, their wives, church members, and continue to make that program better so that we don't have so much of the people, the attrition from our church planner classes. So we're going to be doing those things, and we'll just ask you to pray for some of these things. We're continued growth of our church, people to be saved in our church, people to grow in our church. Also, we're going to need to raise some money. All this stuff costs money. We're not here to raise money tonight, but we will need money. I mean, the stuff costs money, and we're going to need to raise it. So if you want to pray about that, you could pray, think of us and pray that we could get some of those funds in for some of the building. Thank you guys for your friendship and your partnership and your thoughts and prayers. We really do appreciate it. You guys have been wonderful to us. You're great supporters, very kind, very generous. And thank you for your faithfulness here. And I love what you've done with the building. Looks really nice. Like the chairs. Like the what you've done out back. And so thank you for having us. That is the report. I made it through. I got a little nervous. I don't know what was going on there at the beginning. But hopefully you're encouraged by what you guys are doing in Nicaragua. So thank you for what you're doing. Pastor, I'll just turn it over to you with that.